I really didn't know how, what screen to put up with what I was going to talk about. I just wanted to put some of God's beauty up there when we talk about letting God be God. And I think this is going to relate to a lot of people, okay? I think it's going to relate to a lot of people under the radar in lives that we don't talk about that often, but in a part of our lives that greatly affect who we are and how we view life. So I put an unusual amount of time on this because I just felt like it was just so important. So I hope and pray that it's for some of you here today, and I think it will be. So let's have a word of prayer and we'll get started. Heavenly Father, just give it to you. I just pray that you'd be in total control, that you'd open hearts and minds all over the church, that you would anoint your message and bring it in the way that only your Spirit can. Help me to be humble and worshipful in every word spoken. In Christ's name, amen. All right, I want to start out with a question. And it's one of those questions where you shouldn't answer out loud. Do you have an event or an area in your life that you secretly, or sometimes not so secretly, have never really been able to understand how and why it happened? And more importantly than not being able to understand how and why it happened, you can't let it go. And a lot of times, nobody even knows. It's in there, and you might have been fighting it for weeks, months, or years, and it's a constant worry and a constant thought and a constant state of depression or anxiety or worry, and you can't solve it. You can't get rid of it. And most people don't even know that it's in there. I think that describes a lot of people today based on a lot of the counseling that I've done. And you can't let it go because you really cannot, for the life of you, understand why it happened. Or because you've been so angry or so hurt or sometimes so ashamed by what happened that you can't let it go. Or sometimes because you feel like justice was never done. Nobody ever got justice for what they did, and you're going to be upset about it to the day that they get justice. Or honestly, because you really feel like you didn't deserve what happened. And this is the killer. I used to hear my mom say this a lot growing up. You see all these people that act like idiots, for lack of a better word, and care nothing about anything, and they have wonderful, happy lives, and look at me. Look what happened to me. Why? And sometimes I think it's easier if you don't believe in God because you can just say, well, it's just roll the dice, right? But if you believe in God and you know God's real and something like that happens and you've done all you can do and you feel like in your heart, I will never understand why you've done this to me, God, it becomes a much bigger issue if you feel like a God that is powerful and supposed to love has allowed this to happen when other people that obviously have not tried to live the life I have are just going about their lives. And I can't tell you how many people I've ran into that have been in these situations and still are. And sometimes something happens to you, and here's a clicker. You just absolutely, positively cannot put what happened to you into the picture of what you thought God was doing in your life. It's like, God, I thought we had it going on. This is what was going to happen. This is how it was going to roll. And now this, and it doesn't make sense with what you've been doing with me, God. It messes everything up. I don't understand you, God. You ever been there? Events like sicknesses and accidents, like the news that little Lily Grace got today with her tumor. Neglect and abuse. Sometimes you just get pressure and fear in life that you cannot escape and it will not go away and it is wearing you down. And you just begin to scream at God and say, why? How long are you going to let this happen? You see what it's doing to me. You ever been there? Sometimes it's just unfair circumstances. You were done wrong and you know it. And it was very unjust. And anybody and everybody would say, man, you were done wrong. And God just let it happen and you just can't seem to get past it. Sometimes, just flat out, it's loneliness. You're in your own little world of troubles and nobody is there. Sometimes it's an incredible amount of self-doubt. Sometimes, a lot of times, it's lost, broken relationships, marriages that leave you angry, bitter, hurt, not understanding, and you carry it around. And sometimes it's lost loved ones, a miscarriage, a lost child, a lost parent, a lost friend. Those things you carry in you, and long after everybody has patted you on the back and told you, oh, I hope things get better, be strong, long after all the hoopla is over with and everything's back to normal and you're smiling again, you're carrying it. And nobody knows what you feel like inside and how you hurt and the conversations that you have with God. It's even hard to talk about, not for me, but knowing some of the stories that I know that people carry inside of them. And what happens is it begins to affect your relationship with God. You can't help it. And it begins to affect any heartfelt worship you might have, and before long you go through the motions. Because you get ashamed to tell people where you're at. You're a Christian. But you don't feel it. And you really lose that joy. It becomes fake. And a lot of times your relationship with other people gets messed up because you're depressed and you're anxious all the time. And even though they don't know, you're still carrying it. You are. Because you're dealing with it all the time. Your anxiety and your depression and your tolerance level is here all the time to just deal with what you're carrying inside, and they don't know it. So every little thing sets you off, and you don't want to be around people, and you snap at people, and nobody really knows why. And it's because you haven't dealt with what's in here. And there is no age limit, and there is no gender. It's everybody. A lot of people are there right now. And it's a miserable, horrible hell to live in. And most of your conversations with God are a debate or an argument. And this is where the rubber meets the road. So I felt like I had to spend some time on this, because I know how many people are there. So what happens, here's the cycle. You find yourself questioning God. And a lot of your prayers start out with, why? How long? What are you doing? Do you even exist? Do you love me? And then when you do that, you start to feel guilty because of your questions and your anger. So you do one of two things. You either try to pull yourself back up and go on with God because you know it's the right thing to do, but you're hollow. Or you just, every time you get hit in the face and the pain and the isolation grabs you, you just go a little farther away from God. So the question becomes, and you know another reason I know this is so big here is because it's so big on every page of the Bible. Even to the best of people in the Bible. How do you stop the cycle? How do you get out of it? Because this is the kind of thing that will bring you down and make you give up on God, make you give up on family, make you wreck your own life, and eventually make you take your own life if it goes far enough. How do you get out of the water before you drown? And how do you make sense of God in the middle of all of this? And how do you get your faith and your joy and your relationships back again? Well, here's the first thing. You're not alone. And if you're there, you think you are, but you're not. A lot of people feel that way, and it's Satan's number one tool. And the biggest thing I want you to know is you're not alone. And you are under attack. And I want you to come with me, and we're going to take some scriptural answers today to find the way to crawl out of the hole. Okay? Because they're there. And they're real. And we're going to walk through them. And they're simple. But you've got to believe and understand and devote yourself to what I'm going to tell you. Or you're not going to get out of the hole if you're there. So, best place to start is with these fundamental questions. And that is this. Is it wrong to even question God at all? Have you ever asked yourself that? Is it wrong to show irritation and anger with God? Has anybody ever asked yourself that question? Am I wrong to be questioning God? Am I wrong to be, man, I'm complaining and I'm fussing at him. Is he going to strike me down for that? Well, let me give you a real scriptural answer. There's a lot. I mean, we could go right here for 30 minutes and I could just throw verses on the board, but I'm only going to give you a few. Habakkuk in the Old Testament, in Judah, right before they were taken over by the Babylonians. And they were taken over by the Babylonians because they fell so badly. And they were so evil. And Habakkuk was living in those times, and he just felt lost. Habakkuk 1, 2, and 3. Listen to what he says to God, okay? And then you tell me if it's okay to question God. How long, O Lord, must I call for your help? But you do not listen. Violence is everywhere. I cry, but you don't come to save. Must I forever see these evil deeds? Why must I watch all this misery? Wherever I look, I see destruction and violence. I'm surrounded by people who love to argue and love to fight. Is he complaining to God? Does it sound like he's even doing it in a nice way? You could almost see him with the crooked finger, right? God! Exodus 5:22. Moses goes, he tells Pharaoh everything God says. He's going to rescue the Israelites. Nothing happens like he thought. Moses gets the Pharaoh to come down on him even harder, and now all the Israelites are being punished for what Moses tried to do. Moses has a meeting with God, and this is what he says. Then Moses went back to the Lord and protested. Why have you brought all this trouble on your own people, Lord? Why did you send me? Ever since I came to the Pharaoh as your spokesman, he has been even more brutal to your people, and you have done nothing to rescue them. Does that sound like he's fussing at God? Yep, sure does. Which, by the way, there is a way and a time. These people are on shaky ground, but yes, there is a time that good people will complain and fuss with God. David, if we took away all the times David fussed and complained to God, we would lose about 4/5 of the Psalms. Because that's what a lot of them start out as. Psalm 10:1, listen to this one. Oh Lord, why do you stand so far away? Why do you hide when I'm in trouble? How many of you have in your own way said those words? Lord, where are you? Why aren't you here? Where are you? Why are you hiding when I've got all these problems? And I'm going to read you one more and then we'll go on. Psalm 44:23 through 26. Wake up, O Lord. Why do you sleep? Get up. Do not reject us forever. Why do you look the other way? Why do you ignore our suffering and our oppression? We collapse in dust. We lie with our face in the dirt. Rise up, help us, ransom us because of your unfailing love. These people are desperate, and they're hurt, and they don't understand. And they're having a come-to-Jesus meeting with none other than Jesus. So based on these actions of these prophets themselves, let me ask you, these are prophets of God. If you're a prophet of God, if you made the book because of something you wrote, you're probably doing pretty good with God, right? So would you say that it stands to reason that a believer in God, a Christian nowadays, might come to a point where he is going to be angry and actually complain and fuss with God? Did we not just answer that question? You don't have to guess at that. And we could go on and on and on and on. Just open up the Psalms anywhere and start reading. Based on the prophets themselves, there's times that you're going to question God because you're confused and you're full of anguish and you're in despair. And it's not a sin. Did you get that? There are times it is not a sin. And we're going to talk about this. There are times that for you to go to God and say, God, I don't understand. Where are you? Why is this happening? This is nuts. There are times that to go to God, that is an intimate time with God. God actually craves that because you're coming to Him and you're real. Because if you don't say it to Him, you're going to tell me that in our human frailty, there aren't times we feel that way. So if you feel that way and you just come to God and say, hey, how you doing? I'm just so glad to talk with you today. I want you to bless me, all right? And God's like, shut up. I know what you're thinking. Just bring it. I'm a big boy. Talk to me. I want to hear. You know why He wants to hear? Because He knows you're hurting. He knows you're brokenhearted. He wants you to pour it out. The same way your spouse or your best friend would want you to sit down and they'd see it all over your face. You used to have a friend in here, most of you know, named Tim Peter. We'd meet once a week just because everything was going so rough in his life. And I would see it on his face, and I couldn't leave him until I got everything out of his heart, because I loved him. And he'd do the same thing for me. When God sees it on you, he wants it to come out. Where else would he want you to go? He wants you to share the deepest bond you can by talking about these things. But here's the first thing. All right, let me ask you this. Be honest. Just this one thing, and I want to ask anybody else. Have you ever been there with God? Have you ever just wanted to fuss and complain with God? I'm seeing hands and nods. The rest of you are liars, and I want you up front before the service is over. Now, there's no hiding the feelings, but now listen. Here's the first thing I want us to realize. In our travel to get out of this terrible time that we're in, it's okay to complain to God. It's the starting place. Did you get me? It's the starting place. But here's the deal. First thing you got to realize is everybody that questioned God, look at me, listen. Everybody that was questioning God and speaking to God, they were talking to God. They weren't talking to other people about how sorry God is. They weren't complaining to anybody and everybody that would lend an ear. Now, that doesn't mean you don't go to counsel. The Bible says you go to a good friend or a brother. That's what Christians are all about. You go find that brother. You talk to them about how you're feeling. You make it real. But it doesn't mean that you as a Christian, every time you've got it rough, go to anybody and everybody and tell them how much your life sucks. Because that's just showing the whole world you've got no real relationship with God, and God doesn't know what he's doing, and you must not really be intimate with him because all you're doing is dissing him. Do you understand what I'm saying? It would be like my wife did something I didn't understand, and it really hurt my feelings. So I went to my wife and said, "Honey, what are you doing?" With the excuse of, "We need to talk this out because I love you," right? But if I want to be a beanhead about it and she does the same thing, what would I do? I'd go to you and you and you and you and you and tell you how sorry my wife is, and she might not even hear about it. Which one's right? I'm complaining both ways. But one, I'm complaining because I love and I just don't understand. The other, I'm complaining because all I care about is me and I want to just wreck somebody's respect. Most of us will go around even though we don't realize it, and we will complain to every single person that will hear us and get all the pity we can because it's all about us and all the people that can feel sorry for us, and we don't realize that we are completely disrespecting the King of the universe that we say we trust. And then you wonder why people don't want what you have. And you wonder why you're not close with God. I guarantee doggone you, if I did my wife the way most of you do God when they feel like they've been done wrong by God, my wife wouldn't stay with me very long. Luckily, God's a little more forgiving. They spoke directly to God about pains and troubles and anger, even if it was at him. They did not disrespect his character. They did not put him on trial. And they did not tell the world how unjust he was. Now, there is a group that did that. And let's see how they fared. Numbers 14:2. "And all the children of Israel, after they had just been released from Egypt in a great miracle, complained against Moses and Aaron. And the whole congregation said to them, 'If only we died in the land of Egypt, or if only we died in the wilderness, why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword that our wives and children should become victims? Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt?' So they said to whom? One another. 'Let us select a leader and return to Egypt.'" They told anybody that would listen, "Why did God do this to us? What? He's got issues. We're not going to follow him. We're going to go back." Okay, that's not complaining to God. That's totally attacking and insulting God. And if you do that, don't you dare expect to have a relationship with God. He might love you, but don't you dare think you're going to ever get close to him. And don't you think that God is anywhere near helping you through your situation. If you're stuck where you are and you're about to die, that might be the number one reason, starting right there. Because you've told everybody but the one person that wants your intimacy, that wants to hear about it, that might be ready to do something about it if you could just have a conversation with them and get some answers. But instead, you go to everybody else. So first and foremost, you go to him if you're going to complain. You go to him if you don't understand, if you can't get past it, if you can't make sense of it. You go to him and him only. Doesn't mean you put on a fake smile for everybody else. It means you don't diss God. Okay? And that takes a lot of people right there and tells you the first thing you got to do. But now here's the deal. Next, there's something big to ask yourself about the way you question God, about the way you complain to God, about the way you fuss at God. And this is going to determine whether you fall deeper in the hole or whether you get some healing. And this is going to determine, listen, the next thing I'm going to tell you is going to be the determining factor as to when you talk to God and you're not happy, whether you're sinning or bonding. Okay? Because you going to God and pouring your heart out in depression and anger and anxiety can either be a bonding experience or one of the biggest sins of your life, based on one thing. When you're having this moment with God, you got to ask yourself this question: what is your motive behind your questioning and your anger? Did you hear me? Okay. Because a lot of times your motive is just to lash out at God, listen, and put Him on trial because you're not happy and you were done wrong and He's responsible and you want Him to know it. And you're not expecting an answer. You're not even expecting it to get better. You're just mad and you want to tell God you don't appreciate it and you want to put Him on trial. Because we're closed-minded and we don't have an interest in the real reason. It's just, you hurt me. And you want to show how right you are and how unjust it was, and you demand an answer. And let me tell you something. Let me tell you why that's wrong. Because in doing so, you have determined in your mind that God made a mistake. And you're here to straighten Him out. And you might not say that in your conscious mind, but every time you come to Him with just a blind fury that you want to unload on Him because of how He did you, you have decided in your mind He made a mistake and you're going to set God straight. And don't tell me a lot of you haven't done it, because I've done it. And you better get another pastor if you think that that's terrible, because I've done it. Do you come to Him because of that? Because you want to know why and you don't appreciate it and you don't think it was right? Or do you come to Him broken and you just need comfort? And you just need real direction. And you really don't know where to go from here. And you just really, really, really need to know that He's there and He's got you. I've been in arguments with my wife before, and it'll go on for a while, and she'll say, you know how you could have avoided this and we could have stopped hours ago? If instead of fighting, you'd just stop in the middle of it and you'd just give me a hug and tell me you love me, I'd have shut down. I'd have quit. Sometimes when we go to God and we're just, all we need to know is that He's there. We just need confirmation. God, I'm here because I need to know You're there and You got me and You love me. I'm not here to call You wrong. I just need to know You got me. That's okay. That's bonding. Job, you know I'd have to bring him up in this, was a man that suffered a lot of unexplained sorrows. And I got to defend him a little bit here. He went through a lot and was defending God and was holding true. And you know what's funny? Of course, it was his fault that he finally fell. But you know what made him fall? He was doing good. He was going through hell on earth and he was hanging tight. He had three good friends come to cheer him up. And they railed on him so bad that he took the defense and started trying to justify himself. And in his justification, he went too far and decided he was more righteous than God. God knew all along what he was harboring in his heart. And one of the reasons all this happened was to show Job that you got a little self-righteousness in you and you don't realize it. But I want you to listen to something. Job poured his heart out to God and he showed his anger. But here's the difference. You can go back and read a lot of Psalms from David, and I'll read one before we're over with, and you can see that David pours his heart out, and he gives his anger, and he pumps it, buddy. But he does it in such a way that all along he never loses heart with God, and he always comes back and says, God, You're it. You're everything. You're my hope. Job, not so much. I want you to see, and I want you to see if you relate to how Job did this. Now listen, Job was self-focused, and he got proud. Listen to what he says. Job 10:1. I am disgusted with my life. Let me complain freely. I'm reading it in the New Living Testament so you can understand in English what was said. My bitter soul must complain. What's the magic word there? I'm bitter at You, God. I will say to God, don't simply condemn me. Tell me the charge You're bringing against me. What do you gain by oppressing me? Why do you reject me, the work of your own hands, while smiling on the schemes of the wicked? Job already assumes that God is unfairly condemning and oppressing him. He has no idea that Satan's behind it all. Job has already attacked the very character of God. Have you ever screamed at God that way? Some of us have. A lot of us have. He goes on. Listen to this. This is another part right before it. Job 9. Job 9:32. God is not a mortal like me. Now listen to this. This is amazing. So I cannot argue with him or take him to trial. He's wanting to take God to trial. And you're not going to tell me then some of your anxiety and your pain that you've not been there. If only there was a mediator between us, someone who could bring us together. The mediator, still reading in Job, could make God stop beating me, and I would no longer live in terror of his punishment. Then I could speak to him without fear, but I cannot do that in my own strength. Now, this is what he's basically saying. If I were not so scared of you, you big bully, I'd show you a thing or two. If somebody would protect me from you, I'd tell you like it is. He's trying to say, if I could bring a couple of ninjas with me and stand here, buddy, I'd be talking a different tune. That's what he's telling God. Holy moly! I would have a ground wire attached to me stuck in the ground if I was talking that way. Now listen to what he says in one more place, and then I'm going to let this go, but I want you to see how bitter he got, because we get there. Job 31:35. If only I had someone to hear my case. Here is my signature, meaning he signed off on a legal matter. Listen, let the Almighty answer me. So who is he called out as his opponent? Hey, here's my signature on the whole case, Mr. Almighty. He's calling God into court. Listen, let my opponent compose his indictment. I would surely carry it on my shoulder and wear it like a crown. I would give him an account of my steps, and I would approach him like a prince. Well, let me tell you what he's saying there. Hey, here's the paper. Write down your indictment against me, and I'll tell you it's so false, I'll parade it around, and I'll stand like a prince before you, because whatever you're doing to me, you don't have a right, God. Now, that's pretty blatant, and you might not say that in your mind, but the way you live, and the bitterness you carry, and the fact that you will not let it go, and the fact that you've stayed mad for weeks or months, proves that you feel that way. But you haven't given it to God, you haven't trusted him, you blame it on him, and you're going to stay upset about it because it was unjust. You're calling God unjust when you live and you wallow in it. Every day that you spend embittered and unforgiving about something, you're saying, you have no right to have me here, God. You don't know what you're doing. I hold you in contempt. That's just the bottom line. You might not see it that way, but God does. So one, you got to come to God and God only and pour your heart out. But two, as you're pouring your heart out, you better do it because you really want to talk to God about it, not accuse him. And lastly, in a big step over the line here, Job challenges God to write out these accusations. And he strongly proves our last point. Now, listen. When you go to God, and instead of searching for an answer, instead of just pouring your heart out, you just simply attack him. It might be in your prayers. It might just be in your mind. It might be verbally. What happens is you have this is a sign that you have a completely wrong view of life, a completely wrong view of God, and you're going to miss anything that God in his wisdom even allowed you to go through it for. And you're going to stay miserable, and you're going to stay confused. And sometimes this cycle can last you the rest of your life. And my mom was just short of 2 years of spending her entire life in this cycle. And the last 2 years of her life, God pulled her out of it. And it did not make for a happy childhood to live with someone that was that bitter against God and blaming God for everything in their life. Now, here's something I want you to see about, no one can know that you're there but you. So I don't know who I'm talking to, but One point I want to stress before I go on, I want you to see how serious God takes this. And when you get there, this is the tool that you can use to get yourself out of it. Because when you get there, and you are angry, and you are accusing God, in your own human frailty, there's going to be times that it's just hard. You want to not be mad at God. You want to not accuse Him. But what do you do with it? Well, there's a really good thought process here. When Job, in his moment of self-righteousness, accused God and demanded an audience with Him, it's one time in history, and you better be glad that maybe you can't do it. He got what he asked for. God's like, okay, big fella, let's have court. All right? But the meeting didn't go as he planned, because Job had all these questions for mighty God. And when God showed up, there was only one person asking the questions. Job 38:1. Then the Lord answered Job from the whirlwind, and he said, "Who is this who obscures my counsel with ignorant words?" Now stop right there. God loves. You as a parent love your child, right? When your child is at a point that they're going to self-destruct, you've got to break bad on them because you love them. And God is loving and awesome. And because He is loving and awesome, if He has to break bad on you, He will, out of love. But there is a terrible thing to behold when God has to break bad on you. So He has to break bad. And He says, "Who are you obscuring my counsel with your ignorance? Get ready to answer me like a man. When I question you, you will answer me." You ever said that to your kid? "Answer me right now." Have you? That's what pretty much God's doing. Get over here. Put on your big boy britches. Answer me. That's what God's saying. So He's pretty serious about this. Think about that for a minute. That's a scary place to be. Job 40, listen to this. Job 41-8. The Lord answered Job, "Will the one who contends with the Almighty correct him? Let him who argues with God give an answer." Then the Lord, verse 6, then the Lord answered Job from the whirlwind, "Get ready to answer me like a man when I question you. You will inform me. Would you really challenge my justice?" Now listen to this. "Would you declare me guilty to justify yourself?" Have you ever done that? Have you ever beat God down to justify how you didn't deserve it? God answers by saying, "I'm going to make this case, Job, that your thoughts and my thoughts are so far away. Listen, listen. Your thoughts and my thoughts are so far away, you don't have the slightest idea what I'm doing or why. It's unfathomable to you. It would be like laying a BB down in the middle of this congregation and comparing it to the universe. That's how far God says in Scripture His thoughts are from ours. And in your little limited scope of time and space and dimension, you think you got it all figured out, and the first thing that doesn't go your way, you're ready to call me out on trial. You have no earthly idea what you're talking about, son. You cannot put the pieces and the stitches together on the other side of the tapestry. You don't know the picture I'm making." And to show the difference in their thoughts, this is how Job has questions asked from God. It's between 60 and 70 questions, how you want to group them together. No, we're not going to go through them all. But I want you to see God's mentality here. He calls them out. "Are you as strong as God?" Job 49. "Can you thunder with a voice like His? All right, put on your glory and your splendor." And now, tell me God's not sarcastic while reading this. Tell me God doesn't have personality. Listen to the sarcasm. "All right, put on your glory and splendor, your honor and majesty. Give vent to your anger. Let it overflow against the proud. Humiliate the proud with a glance. Walk on the wicked where they stand. Bury them in the dust. Imprison them in the world of the dead. Then even I would praise you, for your own strength would save you." Job 38, he begins to ask the questions. "Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding." You just see the sarcasm here. Now I want you, in those times, if you really believe in God, if you really do, the next time you feel like screaming at God and shaking a finger, and the next time you feel like throwing a pity party and curling up, understand that God might not even like what's happening to you, but could He have stopped it? Yes. If it's happening, the God that had the knowledge, wisdom, and creativity to create everything around us is the one that orchestrated it. He knows a little more than we do. And he loves a little harder than we do. And you've got to put that together in your head in those moments that you want to scream at God about what is he doing, and realize you're like a three-year-old looking around the living room and trying to make a decision over your parents. He goes on. Have you commanded the morning since your days began and caused the dawn to know its place? And I want you, these are very real questions, and God's telling you to ask them. Hey, when you think you know, you can call me out on trial. Were you there that day all the angels were singing and I put this place together? Were you there the first time I made that sunrise? Have you entered the springs of the sea, or have you walked in search of the depths? And it wasn't until just a generation ago that we knew the sea had springs, much less walk through them with God. Pretty awesome. Have the gates of death been revealed to you? Or have you seen the doors of the shadow of death? So God hits him with almost 70 questions about everything in his creation, saying, look at this awesomeness, look at this awesomeness, look at this system, look at this creativity, look at how I orchestrate all this in the whole universe. And you think, I don't know what's going on in your life. Wow, thanks, buddy. That shows a lot of faith. So after hearing this, Job gives a really good answer. Look at his answer here. Job 43, 40 verse 3. Then Job replied to the Lord, I am what, class?
Nothing.
Nothing. How could I ever find the answers? I will cover my mouth with my hand. I have said too much already. I have nothing more to say. Well, amen and amen. Job 42, 3. You asked, who is this that questions my wisdom? This is Job speaking. With such ignorance, it's me. I'm the ignorant one. It is I, and I was talking about things I knew nothing about, things far too wonderful for me. I take back everything I said, and I sit in dust and ashes to show my repentance. That, my friend, is understanding the God that you are complaining to. Is it wrong to complain? No. But you complain to him for support, maybe even for real answers and understanding. You complain to him in love that you still trust him. You don't go to him and throw accusations like you know all that and he doesn't. And when you do, you think on these things. You look around at the simplest part of creation and realize that's the God I'm talking to. I think he knows what's going on. I think he's got this. And if you can't buy that and believe it, then get out of what you call Christianity, because you ain't believing. Why are you playing the game? These are the times he's either everything or you need to leave. Because if he's everything and you think through what Job had to think through, it'll be all you need when you have to go and complain to him. Now let's go on. The realistic question is, how do you not feel this way sometimes? Now, I want you to listen to this. I want you to listen to this answer. You know you're not supposed to feel that way. But we are human. We are sometimes very selfish morons. And sometimes our feelings get away from us. Even Paul says, what in the New Testament? I do what I ain't supposed to do. I don't do what I am supposed to do. Oh, I'm a scumbag. Where's my help? We know we do it. So, how do you handle it? How do you not feel this way? Here's the answer. You ready? It's not that you don't feel that way sometimes. It's how you handle the feelings when they come. It's your perspective. Now listen to what I'm saying. We're going to have times of complete, overwhelming grief and pain and anger, and we can't ignore it. And our human frailty, we're not going to ignore it. But the amazing thing is, oh, this is so sweet. If you don't hear anything else I say, I want you to listen to me right now. This will make you feel better. When you get to this point that it overwhelms you, and you know you shouldn't be saying, God, where are you? I call you into question. You know you shouldn't be doing it. It's not even that you're at the sin level yet, but you just feel guilty for asking God, where are you? Well, this is why my God is so worth worshiping. Listen to me. He's never hurt. He's never angry at you, and this is why. Because Jesus Christ himself took on your human frailty, 100% complete, on purpose, so that he could be pushed beyond his human limits in his own frailty, so that he could experience every single thing you've ever experienced in your worst nightmare, even to the point that you call God out and say, "What has happened? Where are you? What have you done?" Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani. Jesus Christ screamed out from the cross, "God, my God, why did you abandon me? Why have you forsaken me? Where are you, God?" When my God loves me enough to purposefully allow himself to get to that point, so when I get to that point, he can hold my hand and really know how I feel. Why is he not worth worshiping? All the power and all the might and all the creation does not give me a reason to worship God more than that. So he's been there. If you can't get strength and comfort, if you can't glorify him in those moments, when you get to that moment that you scream at him and you say, "Why?" It's okay. But what you need to follow up with, "Boy, I know how you feel now. You've been here. And you did it for me. Now, let me do it for you." Listen close. Courage is not being fearless. You've probably heard this. Courage is continuing on in the face of your fear. Is that right or wrong? So if there was no fear, there would really never be any courage. Because courage is only present when fear comes. Right or wrong? Well, in the same way, real faith is never present without worry, fear, anxiety, and doubt. Because it's not faith if those things haven't come and you don't have to trust him over what you're feeling. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's okay that those feelings have come. They are the point in which you will honor him the most. He knows they will come. Heck, he experienced them. It's what you do with them when they come. You don't avoid them. You bring them to him. You throw it all out there while you're puking on it. Here it is. And then you show faith. And you say, "Nevertheless, it doesn't make sense to me. And I don't like it. And I'm so angry. Nevertheless," there's where the faith comes in. "Nevertheless, I will trust you. You will get me through it. And I know you've got a purpose on the other side of this tapestry, and I just can't see it." And just like fear eventually disappears if you keep stepping in courage, anger and doubt disappear if you keep stepping in faith. Did you get what I just said? As surely as fear will disappear when you keep stepping in courage, your depression and your anger and your worries and your accusations will disappear when you keep on stepping in faith, because he will show himself. And your most intimate times with Jesus Christ will be in those times. In the times he'll talk with you about when you get to that kingdom, when you get into the holy city, New Jerusalem. The times he will talk about will be, "You remember that night when you couldn't take it anymore? And you were just about to end it? You took my hand and you said you trusted me and we got through it. Boy, you see what I did after that? You see what I had in mind for you? You see what my plans were? And you almost gave up, son. Aren't you glad you didn't?" Use these times to draw strength and increase your faith. Follow God's biblical pattern. Give him everything in your heart, honestly. Listen. Then Admit, God, I'm frail. I'm limited in my knowledge. I am hurt by you because of my lack of understanding. Did you get what I just said? After you pour your heart out, every psalm that I've ever read that glorified God from David follows this pattern. God, oh, I hate this. What are you doing? Nevertheless, I'm frail. I lack understanding. God, you are not unjust. I know that full well. Forgive me for my lack of understanding and help me understand. That's the next step. And now, don't ask him to help you trust and forgive and love and stand. Listen, ask him to do it through you. Because you can't do it. And he's that close. He says, I know how you feel. I've been there. You just open your heart. Let me come in. You trust me with it. I'll take care of it. I'll walk you through. You can't do it in your own strength. And that's the beauty. When you get to the other side and you realize, I'd have never thought that way. I'd have never acted that way. I'd have never been that peaceful. I'd have never forgave them. He does it through you. But you got to let him. And after asking an honest why, and after telling him you're going to trust him, here's what I want you to do. I want you to ask him a few questions. This is a good time to work this stuff out, right? I want you to ask him a few questions that show that you're trusting him, and you're trusting that he has a reason. And now you're here with him, and it's a come to Jesus meeting, and you want to ask him a few questions to show him you're in the game and you're interested, and you want to know what to do with this. Questions like, do I have anything I'm holding back, God? Now, not always. Not always, but sometimes when things come in your life and you don't understand it and you're hurting, it's because you're holding back on God and you're blind to something and he's got to show it to you. Questions like, am I really trusting you right now? Maybe all along I've not been trusting you. I've been finding my own way, but as long as everything's smooth, I'm cool with that, and you haven't even helped me realize it. Now you put a road bump and showed me I can't go on my own just to show me I haven't been trusting you. Do you realize that? God will do that. He'll wreck your car in a heartbeat to make you realize you've been doing it on your own. 3, what are you accomplishing in my life? What are you doing right now, God? And what do you want me to do with it? You want me to find a new direction? You want me to wake up to something? And then the last most important question. How can I honor you through this? Listen. When you're the one hurt and you're the one done unjust and you're the one suffering, God says this is an awesome time for us. You can shine right now better than ever. Nobody shows that they're an awesome child of God more than what they do when they're persecuted and it's not even their fault. So God, what would you have me to do to honor you through this? Would you have me to forgive? Would you have me to try to heal others, even the ones that hurt me? Would you have me just walk through this with faith to show everybody that I believe in you? And then when you ask these questions, maybe for the first time in a long time, start listening. They might talk to you. But now, there's going to be times that through all that, and you can ask all those questions, and seemingly even then, you're not going to get an answer to any of it. Ever been there? And I want to tell you, when Job did his little thing, and he called God out, and he had all these questions, when God really did show up, literally, physically, if you'll read real close, he still didn't get an answer to a single question. God didn't answer nothing. He said, I'm asking the questions here. So, if you don't get an answer to anything else, and you don't ever get the reason to why anything happened, I used to think this was always one of the reasons. But after reading and studying for a long time, and after having a lot of stuff happen in my life, I realized that no matter what else God does things for, they're all secondary reasons that we find out that he does it on earth. There's always one primary reason that you ever come to a hard time in your life, and it's never a mistake. So, a very simple, very dumb illustration, but illustrations will plant a peg in your heart and you won't forget, right? So we're going to do an illustration. And I'm going to make a mess. So, it's a good thing my wife is a cook. Used to be a cook. All right. Grapes. What happens when you squeeze a grape? Are you ready? They're fake. They look real, don't they? Thought they were real right up to the point we did what? Squeezed them. What am I getting out of that? And one, even though it carried all that goodness in it, I didn't get it until what happened. And there's a lot of stuff up here that all looks good, and you don't really know what you have until you squeeze it. Has anybody ever picked up a piece of fake fruit to eat it? I have. One of the primary reasons God says, I will bring persecution on you, not because I don't love you. One, because it will grow you. Two, because it will bring you to me. But three, because everything that's in you, there are so many fake people out there that you might not even know that you're not real. And I got to put a good squeeze on you. Because when I squeeze you, everything that's in you is the only time I'm going to see it come out, the only time you're going to see it come out, and the only time the world's going to ever see it come out. The one time God puts a squeeze on you, you know what? You were made to be squeezed. You are a grape. He says, I made you to squeeze you. I made you to be persecuted. And I will persecute you, and I don't want you to feel bad because I came to be the leader of persecution. I came to be the one to show you, you couldn't be persecuted more than me because I love you. Now, out of your love for me, you be persecuted. So that I can see all the goodness tested in its full glory. So that you can pour out what you have into my cup. Now listen. It might show you and the world who's real and who's not. But it also does this. Everything that's in you, God sees as beautiful when you get squeezed. And you hold on to Him and show Him it's real. Every time you are squeezed, you fill the king's cup. Did you hear me? How you respond when you are squeezed is usually the time in your life you screw up the most, right or wrong. How you respond when you were squeezed is really who you were all along. And how you respond when you squeezed is the truth on the fruits that you are giving to the king in his cup. Are you giving fruits at all when you're being squeezed? Now, the second part is this. Sometimes it's total fake and there was no juice there. You weren't even a Christian. But what about Job? Did Job believe in God? Yeah. Well, let's look at the Job scenario. Hey, buddy. You want to help me out? All right. I have here two pre-made glasses of grape juice. And what I want you to do, you get to play God today. I want you to be my taste tester. Okay? You trust me? Okay. Taste this. It's not alcoholic. Pretty good. Save the best for last. Taste this. What? What? Oh, I wish I had a camera. Oh, you probably smelled it before you drank it, didn't you? Just get a little doggy poo in it. No, I'm just kidding. This is vinegar with food coloring in it. Pure vinegar. I love you. Thank you. Thank you. All right. I figured your face would help them remember this forever. It really is no joke. It's vinegar. I got him. Listen. When Job was squeezed, some of us are not Christians at all, and we thought we were till we were squeezed, but some of us really are Christians, but we're still so much about ourselves that we're like Job when we get squeezed. And what comes out is vinegar. Now listen, when you get squeezed, 110% of the time, God is doing this first. He wants to see what will come out of you, and it is the only time you're going to really know. It's the biggest time of your entire life to glorify Him. And I said in Sunday school today, and I'm going to say it to the rest of you, in 1st and 2nd century, when Christians were on fire for Jesus Christ, the church had to go to people and say, please stop going out and trying to pick reasons to get martyred. People were going out and finding reasons to be martyred for Jesus Christ, imprisoned and killed, because they were so emphatically crazy about Him and what He had done for them that they couldn't give enough. And they wanted to be squashed to show their love for Christ. We lose a job, we lose a relationship, we have a bad report, and we're ready to throw God away and tell Him He never was real, and if He is, He's heartless. This is the only country we've lived a perfected life, a spoiled, rotten life enough to have that attitude. Most of the places in the world today, you choose Christ and it means you're taking a chance with your life. You have got to just change your entire mentality, and everything that happens to you is your chance to be squeezed for God. What comes out when you're squeezed? And don't say, well, that's not real persecution. If I have a sick story, if this happens, if that happens, it's not like I'm being persecuted for Christ. It's not the same. Tell me, was Job threatened to be put on a cross? No. What was Job suffering? Job was suffering sickness, loss of family, right? Same things we fight. But Job was being challenged and squeezed. He was being persecuted by God to see what would come out. And it's the time that we fail the most. I'm about done, believe it or not, but I want you to get this. You ask yourself this question, nobody else. Look at me, listen, stop. Do you ruin the most important times of your life with God because you're so self-focused that nothing but vinegar comes out when you get squeezed? Because here's what He does. Number one, all He cares about is our love and our sacrifice, right or wrong. So if in your times of trouble and you're squeezed, all you give Him is vinegar instead of love and trust and sacrifice, He literally is drinking of that cup. What you give Him is what He thrives on. Are you giving Him sweet? Are you giving Him vinegar? You're filling the King's cup every time. But more than that, God doesn't keep what we give Him. Guess why? He takes that cup and it's like medicine, because everybody around us is dying. Everybody around us needs a taste of that. So God takes a sip and He says, ah, that's sweet. You got it. I want you to take the rest of that was squeezed out and share it with everybody around you. Your cup bubbles over when you get squished for the Lord. And that sweetness goes around everybody that's circled around you. They see every bit of what comes out of you when you get squeezed. And either they get turned off to God or they see God is real for the first time because of the juices that got squeezed out of you. Do you glorify God or do you let Him down? It is the most important time you will ever have with God. And the only way to have that is to realize that your relationship and your health and your finances and anything else you could think of is no comparison to what you can do for God. And we are supposed to glory in our persecutions and say, oh, I got a chance to glorify You. It's what it's all about. Help me do well. There's an old Chinese proverb that says this: pure gold does not fear the furnace. Why? Because what happens to pure gold in the furnace? And it stays pure gold. It's fine. It loses nothing because every piece of it is pure. Right? Kind of reminds me of an even more wisdom-filled word. 1 Peter 1:6. In this, read it with me, you greatly rejoice. Though now for a little while, if need be, you have been grieved by various trials. He doesn't say you won't be grieved. That the genuineness of your faith, when you were squashed, being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, may be found to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ. I want to close with this, and it was so sweet. I had a friend come into QC, and he said, I just got to share this. He didn't even know me. He just heard Josh in the bathroom while using the bathroom say to another one, praise Jesus, brother. And he followed him in and said, y'all must be Christians. And he had to just share a story with us. And his mom's name was Lula. And she's in the hospital. He said, I got to show a video to you. She's very old. And all of her bowels are blocked completely. And she's septic. And she's only given a couple of days to live. He said, I want to tell you a story about my mom. He said, when we were very young, my dad had an affair. Had a child by that affair. Left my mom for the woman and moved into a house very close by. And that child from that affair is the same age as me. He said, I want to tell you what my mom did. He said, she befriended that boy from that adulterous affair and became just like his mother so that he spent more time with her than he did his real mother. And he grew up loving her like a mother. And she went over and befriended her husband that had adultery. And she went over and befriended the wife. And she remained good friends and spent much time in their house loving on their children and helping them through their life after that was done to her. And remained a mother to their children. And never had a bitter day. She took that bitterness. She gave it to God and she let him squeeze. And she's now on her deathbed. And what she said was, she was having it rough. She was dying slowly because her bowels died literally in her body. He said, well, my God has a reason for keeping me as long as he has. And however long he wants to keep me, he knows what he's doing. But I tell you, I'm ready to go if he wants to call me right now. And the video was of her after what an awesome life. And she's still on her deathbed and she's still loving God and not questioning anything. Raising her little weak, frail hands up and trying to sing glorious hymns to God. And she was so weak that she had to use two hands to lift one. And she's praising God. This was a few days ago. She may have already passed on. She's either passed on or she's getting ready to pass on. And she's lived her entire life a squashed grape with nothing but sweetness that's come out. And she is a mighty warrior for Christ. As sure as if she was a Navy SEAL Team 6. She is a mighty warrior for Christ, laying in that bed so weak as a little woman she can't raise her hand. You think that's not beautiful to Christ? Oh my gosh. That's what he wants out of us. And don't you think he's asking you to do anything as some self-righteous God that he didn't already do to show us the way. That's why it's so beautiful. That's why you can't say no. He said, you're my beloved. I love you so much. Look what I'm doing. Now, will you show me that passion? Will you just trust me enough to suffer a little bit and just put your arms around me anyway? This is what David did in his despair and confusion. This is very short. I'm going to walk you through it. Psalm 13:1. Oh, Lord, how long will you forget me? Forever? This is a bad place to start, ain't it? How long will you look the other way? How long must I struggle with anguish in my soul, with sorrow in my heart every day? How long will my enemy have the upper hand? When bad news comes and it's too much and you've been done wrong, pour your heart out. Then tell him you're frail. Then tell him your hope's in him and he's the only one that can help you. Listen to what David says very next verse. Turn and answer me, O Lord my God. But he's not saying it in anger. Look what he says. Restore the sparkle to my eyes, or I will die. There is no one, Lord, that can help me. He's not saying, why do you kick me in the dirt? He's saying, why, God? And then the next breath, he says, but you are the only one that can put a sparkle back in my eye. I trust you. If you don't do it, I'll die. You're the only hope I have. I'm not spitting at you, God. I'm telling you. I don't understand, but you're the only one that can help me. That's how you get through this, people. Then you ask him for wisdom. And then you give off sweet juice. Psalm 13, 5, 6 is how he ends this little short psalm. But I trust in your unfailing love. I rejoice because you have rescued me. He's already talking future tense. I will sing to the Lord because he is good to me. You're supposed to be full of the fruit of the Spirit, then be pressed. By the way, when Job went through what he did, Job even had to have a little cheat on the test. He had to have a little help. But he ended beautifully. He ended, Lord, my trust is in you. My face is on the ground. I'll hold my tongue. I'm sorry. And he passed the test. Job got back a double portion of everything he ever lost. Now, I'm not saying you will or you won't. I'm saying that doesn't matter. I'm saying, though he slay me, will I trust him? But I'm also saying that that might just be the thing he's waiting for, because all that matters to him is your heart. And once he gets that heart, he wants to bless his children. I'm saying we are fat, happy, dumb, lazy Christians, and we ought to have a battle cry. We ought to be at war. So, if he blesses us, this is my final statement. Are you ready? And they all said, now listen closer, I'm going to keep talking. When he blesses us, listen, we honor him. When he crushes us, the juice that flows out of us honors him more. I feel like my battle cry, and I hope yours too, I know this for me. I feel like my battle cry should be, may my trials fill your cup, O King. May my trials fill your cup. May everything that ever hits me be nothing but a glory to you. May I never fail you again. May I never doubt you. May I never put you on trial. May I always look to you to lead me and lift me instead of accusing you of what you've done. May my trials always fill your cup, O King. Simple question, up to this point in your life, right now, where you sit with what you're holding, for lack of a better pun, what's in your grape? And you need to get real. And if you've been holding God in contempt and haven't even realized it, let this be the day that your vinegar turns into the sweetest wine you could have ever put in his cup. Fill his cup with something today. Stop being ashamed. Stop being mad. Stop being accusatory. Put it in his hands. Knowing he's the God of the universe and he's going to do something with it. And with that knowledge, let it go. With that knowledge, know that the best is yet to come. And you are in the hands of someone that loves you so much they had their skin torn off their back for you. And they have the ability to make everything in your life make beautiful sense. And all they're asking you to do is give me glory in your suffering. Let's stand for prayer.